Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 18, Episode 9. This is Writing Excuses.
Unpacking the tension.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Won.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Howard.
We are going to be spending the next several weeks talking about tension. I'm going to go ahead and frame this a little bit because as we were trying to set the season, we each brought something that we have been struggling with a little bit or a new toolbox that we've been noodling with. Aaron and I happen to have simultaneously just taught a class on tension. So she's going to be chiming in here in a moment, but I want to start explaining what's going through my head with this. So we're often taught that a story must have conflict. And I think that actually what drives a story is tension, but that conflict is the easiest form of tension to teach. And I started thinking about this while I was reading Japanese literature, and which often does not have any visible conflict, but there's a ton of tension. And it really solidified for me while I was watching Ted Lasso. There's slight spoilers here, but when you watch the Christmas episode of Ted Lasso, there's no villain. Everyone is being kind. There's no conflict. All of the conflict comes from this anticipation of something that you think is going to go wrong. For instance, at the beginning of the Christmas episode, he's watching It's a Wonderful Life and he's drinking. And so obviously the next thing that's going to happen is he's going to go on a bender and he's going to have a dream sequence. And none of that is what happens. But they so clearly signpost it that it builds this tension and then you get this release. So what I want to talk about is looking at some different types of tension. So we're going to kind of give you an overview, and then for the rest of the episodes, we'll be digging into each type of tension. So I'm going to break them down, and then I'm going to let other people talk. The types of tension that I am identifying as I'm attempting to build this toolbox are anticipation, juxtaposition, unanswered questions, conflict, and then microtension. Aaron, on the other hand, is constructing a tension toolbox in a different way.
Yeah, and I will say that one of the things I love about tension, just to start, is that tension is emotional. Just the word tension feels more emotional than conflict. And I think it's an amazing reminder that you need some sort of engagement with the thing in order to be tense. If you don't care, you won't be tense. I think sometimes because we think a lot about conflict, people will open a story or a novel or a movie with a conflict that we haven't bought into. And so we're not feeling the tension. We just see the conflict. Like when you have a little, you know, your two dinosaurs as a kid and you have them fight. And, you know, the two dinosaurs are fighting with each other, but why? And does anyone care? And so to me, tension is a lot about building in and thinking about the emotion. And the other thing that I really love about just tension versus conflict is that conflict is something that is felt on the page. Like your characters are in conflict with each other, perhaps, or with nature or what have you. But your reader is not in conflict. They are observing the conflict. The tension is the thing that both the readers and the characters can share.
I love this description
of tension as requiring an emotional investment. For me, the way I have always thought about it, tension is a combination of anticipation and hope. You anticipate something bad is going to happen. You hope it doesn't. But without that hope, without that one outcome I like and one outcome I don't like, there isn't really any tension. It's just a bunch of stuff that happens.
I think the outcome of tension and hope is where a lot of romance comes from. You know, it's like, oh, you know that they're going to get together. And so that's a thing that you're hoping for the entire time, but you keep seeing all of the reasons that they aren't going to get together, which is what builds that tension. I really like that framing, Dan.
Without going into detail, one of the things that for me makes a good action scene is if I care about what's happening. If the action scene, you know, and fight scenes are often, you know, inherently conflict because they're fighting. But if I'm not feeling tension, if I'm not emotionally invested, all the great fight choreography is just eye candy. I don't care. And so tension is key. It's critical.
Yeah. And I think that brings up a really interesting point, because for me, tension is almost always about relationships, because stakes aren't necessarily about survival. Stakes are about consequence and how you see yourself or how you see other people in connection to other characters, because that's how we think about it and that's how we feel it. So, you know, just for a quick example, going to what you're saying, Howard, like the lobby scene out of The Matrix is them fighting a bunch of goons. The tension in that scene doesn't come from, are they going to shoot these security guards? It comes from, is Neo starting to realize who he is? Is he in tension with himself? What matters to him? And so we're excited by that scene because we see, as Morpheus says, he's starting to believe. We see that relationship starting to change. And so the tension comes from an internal journey that the character's on, not the conflict of there are 10 random goons that need to get out of their way at this point.
I think you can also, like, if you're thinking, oh, I'm just starting my story, nobody yet cares about my characters, how am I going to create this tension?
Exactly.
One way to do that also is to tap into kind of primal tensions, I think, that we feel. So if you are on a spaceship and the spaceship is breaking, you know, that's bad. But if it's also this person's first day on the job, you know, there's a certain primal, oh crap, I just got this job and now everything's breaking, or I have to give a speech. The things that people freak out about in their dreams, like that kind of thing, if you put it on the page, it's a way to tap into tensions that people might be feeling in their own lives and then use that to kind of move the action forward while you build up the character engagement.
Yeah, the thing that you said about conflict being something the character sees, but tension is something the audience sees. Conflict for the character is, am I going to survive this? I, as the reader at the beginning of a book, I don't really care yet. I don't know you. Sure, if you fall out into space and die, that's not particularly interesting to me. But what is interesting to me is, are you going to feel bad about it being your fault that you fell out into space and died, right? I think that's the difference between tension and that conflict in that way of, you know, stakes matter or survival matters to the character, but you have to give me a reason to care. And that's where tension comes in.
Circling back to Mary Robinette's five things here. Can I talk about juxtaposition for just a moment?
I think you can after the break. And that is going to create tension for our readers, our listeners, as they wait to find out what Howard is going to say about juxtaposition.
Hey, writers, are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/WX.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so our thing of the week this week is Dark One Forgotten, the first official collaboration between Dan Wells and Brandon Sanderson. This is the prequel to a story that has been out in graphic novel form for a while called Dark One. It's a portal fantasy. This is presented, the prequel is presented as if it were a 6-episode podcast. Someone is making an amateur true crime podcast about a mysterious murder that has remained unsolved for 30 years. And over the course of the series, discovers many more mysteries and a much larger thing going on. This is a lot of fun because of that nature of as a faux podcast. It is only in audio. It's available pretty much everywhere. Audiobooks are available. And take special note of this thing of the week because several episodes from now, we're going to do a deep dive on this one. When we finish our whole tension class that we're doing, we are going to do a deep dive into Dark One Forgotten and talk about the process of writing it and producing it and everything at length. So it's a little over 6 hours and it's a lot of fun. They did an amazing job on the recording. The cast is wonderful. So Dark One Forgotten by Dan Wells and Brandon Sanderson.
All right, Howard.
Okay.
All right, Howard, tell me. Tell me about Juxtaposition and
Return of the King, the Peter Jackson. We have the scene where the Steward of Gondor has sent troops into Osgiliath to try and take it back. And while those troops are in Osgiliath, the Steward is eating and making, I can't remember if it's Merry or Pippin, making them sing.
Pippin.
It's Pippin, and we are watching, is it John Noble? Is that the name of the actor?
I think it's
John Noble. We are watching him crush food in his mouth and dribble on his face and tear meat from bone as we watch these soldiers ride into Osgiliath. And it is brilliant and beautiful as juxtaposition, and also serves as a way to give us X-rated levels of gory, horrible violence without actually doing that. Your brain does all the work because of the juxtaposition. And it makes you terribly tense because the soldiers on the horses have not yet been turned into grapes in John Noble's mouth yet, and you don't know if they will be.
That's a great example. It's something that it makes me think of that I've been thinking about a lot is how much of storytelling is a collaboration between the author and the reader. We talk about this in puppetry, that the difference between playing with dolls in a puppet show is that one of them has an audience, and that the puppet exists in this liminal space between us. And it is also true for writing, that I can write something, but the moment you start consuming it, you're going to bring your own lens to it, your own experience, and you're going to combine things in your own head in ways that I can't anticipate.
That makes me think a lot of something that I find really fascinating about tension, and it is that difference between what readers are doing and what the characters are doing, is narrative tension versus what I call contextual tension. Hmm. So narrative tension is the tension that characters feel, and contextual tension is the tension that readers feel. And they don't actually have to be the same. If the characters are blithely walking into an ambush, but you signal to the reader that there's an ambush coming, there's a difference there versus where both are feeling tense. So there's a lot of really, really fun things that you can do there in separating those two and playing with where your character's feeling tension and where do you want your reader to be.
Yeah, I think of this really as genre expectations, right? So if you're in romance, you're in horror, you're in mystery in the ways that we've talked about in the past, the audience has certain expectations. And this is why when I talk about storytelling, I always talk about pattern recognition, right? We have read and absorbed thousands upon thousands of stories over the course of our life. And so we have ideas of how these things are supposed to go. You can use those expectations for a lot of these techniques we're talking about here, in particular, anticipation and juxtaposition. Anticipation being sort of like, we think we know how it's going to go. And then juxtaposition is the contrast of, we thought it was going to go this way, but now it's going that way. And I think you can use that tension between the audience expectation and what's happening in the text to kind of create a discordant note that automatically creates a sense of tension that the audience is so hungry for it to be resolved. And waiting for that resolution, waiting for that next chord to progress so that we know where we're going is one of the most effective ways to create tension between the book and the audience.
So one of the elements on Mary Robinette's list that we haven't talked much about yet is unanswered questions, which at one level, that's just what a mystery is, right? Somebody is dead. We want to know who killed them and how. And so we have that question. But there's a lot of other ways to use this type of tension. And the example that comes to mind is the old TV show Alias, which kind of leaned a little too heavily on this particular trope. But many, I would go so far as to say most of those episodes started with the main character in a horrible situation. And then we would cut away and say 72 hours earlier. And then that leaves us with this unanswered question of, oh no, I know she's going to be in horrible peril at some point. How does that happen? How is that situation created? What is going to go massively wrong? And that creates the tension that draws us through the episode to get the answer to that question.
This is also what's commonly referred to as mystery box storytelling. This is the J.J. Abrams idea of asking what's in the box, what's in the puzzle, can be a driving force for your entire narrative. So Lost is probably the most famous example of this. And sometimes it could be unsatisfying if it's clear they never knew what was in the box in the first place. But you can really connect with an audience who also wants to know what is the core of this mystery? What is the core thing that's happening? A more recent example is Severance is a great example of like, what the hell are they actually doing down there is a thing that really drives the story forward.
Speaking of boxes, literally, since we've done Glass Onion as Thing of the Week, mm-hmm. maybe you have all seen this, but it starts with a box being opened. And I think that why that is so important is because in order to have your audience trust that you will answer the unanswered questions, it helps to pose a question and answer it early on so that you're like, I am capable of answering questions. How will they open this box? They do. You saw it. And so then you're actually willing to give more space. Each time you answer a question for an audience member or for a reader, I think what happens is you lengthen the amount of time that you can put between question and answer because they trust you that much more.
Dan's example from Alias, 72 hours earlier, is the in media res, we're familiar with that structure. One of my favorite reversals of that can be found in the first paintball episode of Community. I think it's episode 23 of season one, where Jeff leaves the room. We've been told, oh, there's going to be a game of paintball assassin, whatever. Jeff leaves the room and says, I'll see you losers later. I'm going to go take a nap in my car. And then we see, ka-chung, 1 hour later, Jeff wakes up in his car, steps out of the car, and the campus is a wasteland. With, sort of zombie wasteland music playing. And for a couple of minutes there, you're wondering, okay, what happened? I now have a lot of questions about what could have gone this wrong in an hour. Now, obviously, it's Community. So it's a comedy. So there's exaggeration, but the tool is still there for you. Running the clock forward a little bit and things have changed. And how did it get this bad this quickly?
I'm going to briefly cut in to say that one of the reasons that we separated unanswered questions from anticipation is that And we went back and forth on whether or not they should be lumped together, is that with anticipation, it is something that you know is going to happen. Like, you know that when they walk down the basement steps that a bad thing is going to happen, and tension comes from that. It's anticipating an outcome versus unanswered questions where you don't know the answer. So in one, you can be, with anticipation, you can be wrong about the answer. Like, often you build tension by having them go down the stairs and then something jumps out at them, but it's just the cat. So you can build anticipation and tension and let the reader be wrong about what they're anticipating, but that is different than the reader does not know what is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Severance, I'm actually expecting not to get answers to many of the questions I have. It's sort of a genre expectation that I would almost be unsatisfied if they did answer all those questions, but finding out more so I can start piecing together the puzzle is one of the narrative things that's pulling me through this story that I'm loving.
Yeah. And the last piece of it that we need to define, and then we'll go to our homework, is microtension. And I'll try to keep this short. Microtension are smaller tensions that happen within a larger scene. So if your character is attempting to deal with a murder, but then they also have to make spaghetti dinner, and the water boils over, that's a micro tension. They're small tensions that pop up often from mundane sources, but not always.
And they can be related to the plot. I need to get the autopsy report, and in order to get the autopsy report, I have to apologize to the coroner. Now macro tension would be, I'm going to go steal the report.
Yep.
Hey, should I do homework?
I think that's a great idea, Howard.
I should do homework. Okay. In this episode, we covered five types of tension: anticipation, juxtaposition, unanswered questions, conflict, and micro tension. Look at your current work in progress or something that you're reading. Last week, we invited you to read a mystery. And I try to identify examples of each of these. And that's it.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write. Imagine working with horses as a way to explore and enhance your creative process, all while enjoying the beautiful surroundings of Bear Lake, Utah. Led by me and Dan, this 4-day workshop is suitable for writers and riders of all levels and experience. Come make new connections, receive valuable feedback, and set your writing goals in motion. Visit writingexcuses.com for more information about writing excuses. You are out of excuses. Now go ride. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr. and mastered by Alex Jackson. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.